Thank you very much, Mario. Our next speaker, her name is Maria, just Maria, is going to speak regarding a crackdown on immigrant labor in the workplace. She will be speaking in Spanish, and Donna's having a busy night, and Donna will translate into English for us. Maria.
Mi nombre es María y vengo para dar un testimonio en mi vida. Vine de inmigrante a Estados Unidos por salir adelante para mi familia y mis hijos, porque uno de padre sienta eso responsabilidad, llevar a los hijos para darles de comer y vestirlos. Era todo nada más por lo que huimos de México, por la pobreza que caímos. Pero llegamos aquí de inmigrantes a una vida mejor.
I came to this country from Mexico 11 years ago because I wanted to make a better life for my family and I. We came here out of economic necessity. Shortly after I came, I found a job cleaning office buildings for a nationwide business service company. I worked very hard at my job, but still, my family and I struggled to make ends meet. We shared our resources, took care of each other, and did the best we could because that is what one must do to improve their life.
Todos los 11 años, 10 años trabajando bien duro en todo lo que se podía para sostener a la familia. Y el 11 de septiembre fue tremendamente una tragedia para nosotros porque estábamos trabajando y en octubre, después del 11 de septiembre, pidieron documentos en el trabajo y pues no teníamos documentos y ya tenía 10 años trabajando sin documentos y los pedía que demostráramos los documentos y pagaban $12 la hora por tanto año trabajando y después lo dieron a $8 por hora para seguir trabajando. Si quieres, si no, pues no hay trabajo.
Then 9/11 happened and everything got much, much worse for my family and for my community. 1 month after the attacks, I was fired from my job because I was an undocumented worker. This reason they gave me, being undocumented, did not matter to them before 9/11. They hired me and paid me $12 for almost a decade, even though I was undocumented all along. I lost my job 1 month after 9/11 and did not find another one for over 9 months.
Para entonces, pues, nos despidieron y duramos 9 meses sin trabajo porque no teníamos documentos después del 11 de septiembre. No había trabajo, íbamos y no había trabajo. Empezamos de uno en uno a que nos desocuparan en los trabajos por la documentación. Y pasamos bastante cosas porque no teníamos para la renta, hacíamos garaseos, vendíamos lo que podíamos para sustentar para adelante porque somos mi esposo y 5 de familia, eran bastantes, 15 en total. Y pues eso del 9 de septiembre no se nos olvida nunca. Tuvimos que pedir comidas en las iglesias. La comunidad les pedíamos y nos ayudaban con lo que podían.
Myself and 15 other family members had similar experiences. Soon everyone around me was out of work. Everyone in my family and so many in my community searched and searched for replacement jobs, but there was nothing out there for us. I had been living in this country for over a decade, working, raising my family, and paying taxes, and did not even have a bed to sleep on. Only now, I could not even put food on the table or buy good clothes for my children. Everyone tried their best to help each other, But with so many people in trouble, it was impossible. My family sold everything we owned. We begged for food and visited churches looking for any kind of help.
Después de mucho tiempo, a los 9 meses, encontramos trabajo. Para entonces, pues, era difícil, cobrando menos y volver a empezar de nuevo. Ahora los inmigrantes somos explotados. Desde el 9 de septiembre, mi familia todavía no se recupera de ese evento. Estamos trabajando bien fuerte y bien estable para seguir adelante.
I finally found another job as a janitor with a different company, earning $8 an hour. Because of today's climate, we immigrant workers are even further exploited than we were before 9/11. I make a lot less money than I did before I lost my first job. I have to work so much harder and for more hours. I just do my work, though, because I do not want to go back to the way things were. My family and I have not even recovered from those months immediately after 9/11. We are still struggling to keep our heads above water, and my job is critical to us becoming more stable.
Yo estaba muy deprimida por lo que yo pasé y por lo que vi pasar a otras personas. Siento que me he quedado mi dignidad y seguridad de mi familia. Todavía estamos pagando ese precio de esa tragedia y sufrimos mucho en el momento trabajando más fuerte para poder sostenernos.
What I went through and what I saw many around me going through caused me a lot of sadness, depression. I was filled with desperation during those 9 months of looking for work. I was so depressed, and I still am, because I feel that my dignity was taken away. My family's safety was taken away. We are still paying the price, and we are still suffering. Also, we are still working hard to survive.
Este gobierno ha puesto estas pólizas que nos llevan en cuenta a la humanidad, lo que me ha pasado a mí y a mi familia y a mi comunidad desde el 11 de septiembre. Me ha sido sentir que este gobierno no toma en cuenta ni la importancia de la comunidad inmigrante. Les quiero decir a todos que hoy en día nuestra comunidad está en lucha. Les quiero decir a todos que lo único que deseamos es que nos traten con igualdad en los trabajos y que nos traten con humanidad que nos merecemos como miembro de la comunidad de este país.
The government and its policies has overlooked our humanity. What happened to me, to my family, and to my community after 9/11 made me feel that the government does not care about immigrants. I want to tell everyone that our communities are struggling today. I want to tell everyone that all we want is to work hard and be treated like the hard workers and good community members that we are.
Gracias.
Thank you, Maria. Our next testimony will be delivered by Milton Reynolds, who will speak regarding racial profiling, harassment, and a number. It's an unbelievable story. You'll get it.
Good evening, everybody. I'd first like to start by saying that I'm not actually a resident of Santa Clara County. I live in the county to the north, San Mateo County, but I thought I would come down and lend my voice in the sense that maybe in hopes that it would encourage somebody else to come out and speak, because I do believe that sharing our voices and sharing our stories is one of the most powerful acts that we can do in turning the tide around racial profiling. I'm not going to go into a long list of incidences that I've experienced in my life, but let me just say that growing up in San Mateo County, I've been on the receiving end of a law enforcement officer's gun on 5 different times in my life, and growing up was regularly and routinely pulled over, both as a driver and a passenger of a car, most recently by an undercover narcotics agent for no unknown reason. But the incident that actually got me started in my work around the efforts took place several years back. I was actually on my way home from teaching, a long day of teaching, in fact, and I happened to look up in my rearview mirror and saw a law enforcement officer following me. And I thought to myself that when I, you know, turn on my turn indicator and pull in my driveway, that I'm likely to get the Christmas lights. And in fact, that is what happened. So I was about saturated, having experienced this for the better part of my life, and got out of the car and kind of met the officer halfway. And I asked him, I said, "Why did you pull me over?" And he stumbled and stuttered for a bit, and then he said, "You know, you blew right through that stop sign, and you were driving like a bat out of hell." And I knew, first of all, that I didn't roll through a stop sign, because I can ill afford to do that, and having grown up in San Carlos, I know that very well. So we exchanged a few words, and he asked me for my driver's license and registration, which I did hand to him. And I happened to turn around, and he was stroking the barrel of a shotgun in his car and staring me down in my driveway. So, needless to say, we exchanged some words when he came back to the car, and I suggested that I would see him in court. Now, in the several weeks between the time that I went to court and the time the ticket was issued, I had all law enforcement officers parked in front of my apartment on a daily basis, shining lights through my windows and tailing me around town, to the point where my neighbors were actually asking me what was taking place. Needless to say, I went to court, and after both of us taking the oath, and I began with my testimony, the officer began, he stood up and then began to perjure himself and lie in the courtroom. I stood up and confronted him around that. And fortunately, and I believe it was actually because the judge was a woman and the court reporter was an African-American woman, that my story was actually held and justice did prevail. But after that, I became involved in the work of the Racial Justice Coalition, which in many ways is a more hopeful story. And while we weren't able to pass mandatory data collection bills in the state of California, we had two opportunities that Governor Davis decided not to to get on board with. We did, I believe, reach some significant gains. When we started our campaign, I believe there's two, possibly three law enforcement agencies in the state of California that collected data around the issues of racial profiling, looking specifically at the issue of race or ethnicity, who was pulled over, the reason for stopping the person, whether or not anything was found during the search, and ultimately whether or not a ticket was issued. But by the time we were done, there were literally dozens of law enforcement agencies that were in support of the work. Now, unfortunately, the events of 9/11 put an end to the progress that we had made. And in my own mind, I felt that the events of 9/11 would present an organic opportunity for communities, particularly targeted communities and communities of colors, communities of color, to come together and form a coalition so that we might advocate on each other's behalf. But I think, unfortunately, identity politics reared its ugly head. And aside from the Japanese American community, which made me very proud to see them come out, I didn't see many other communities of color coming out in the ways that they could have. Now, fortunately, there's been some time has passed since then, and some of the fear has subsided, and I think, once again, the opportunity to come together as a community of conscience is here. And I think we're at an opportune time in the history of California. I think not only do targeted communities and communities of color constitute a political majority, but we're also at a time of contradictions in which things like Ward Connolly's bill, Proposition 54, could really jeopardize our efforts. And so my hope is that the conversation that starts here tonight doesn't end tonight, and that we continue to be in dialogue for the long term. And that if we come together as a community of conscience and vote our conscience, that we can, in fact, turn the tide and begin to amend some of our nation's negative traditions around the issues of bigotry, racism, and prejudice. And I think minimally we can get out and vote down Prop 54, but I think on a long-term basis, if we stay and can contact and communication with each other and devise some comprehensive strategies, we can not only put an end to this, but when prejudice and racism rears its ugly head, we can lend our voices to each other's causes and hopefully put an end to this and build a better future for our country. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Milton. We have one final testimonial to hear tonight. It will be delivered by Firuz Abdullah on behalf of, we will call her Ms. A.
Good evening and assalamu alaikum. My name is Firuz Abdullah, and I will be speaking on behalf of a woman who was harassed by the Mountain View Police Department. Because of what happened to her, she does not feel safe revealing her identity. However, I'm here to tell you her story because what happened to her could have just as easily have happened to me. Several months ago, at 2 p.m. in the afternoon, I was driving to work to meet with my manager regarding a recent work-related trip to Dubai. As I was driving, I noticed that a police car was following me. He pulled me over and asked me if I knew what I had done wrong. I said no. And he told me that my brake lights were not working. He asked for my driver's license and proof of insurance. As I reached into my purse, $3,000 in currency from Dubai fell out of my purse and onto the car floor. The officer asked to see the money. He held it up to the sunlight and asked me where it was from. I told him it was currency from Dubai. The officer did not know where Dubai was, so I told him it was the United Arab Emirates. With a puzzled look, he asked me what I was doing in Dubai, and I told him I was there for a work-related trip. He asked me, "Are you a Muslim?" "No," I said. He then asked, "Do you celebrate Ramadan?" I said, "I'm a Hindu. We do not celebrate Ramadan." The officer told me to wait in the car while he went to call someone. Soon, a second and then a third officer arrived, who one by one asked me the same questions as the first officer. After the three officers talked with each other, police officer number one came back to my car and asked me to tell them the truth. "I am telling you the truth," I said. He told me to roll down the driver's side window all the way down. He then grabbed my upper arm and gripped it tight. I screamed in pain, and he told me to get out of the car. I told him, "I can't get out of the car because you're holding my arm." When I got out of the car, he asked me to turn around, and then he pushed me up against the car and grabbed my arm at the same spot where he had held me before and handcuffed me. And this is a photograph of her arm. There was not much time to think. I was really scared, and I didn't know why they were arresting me. Police officer in one was holding me so tightly that it hurt. I wasn't sure what they thought I would do. They arrested me without telling me what I did wrong and without reading me my Miranda rights. Police officer number one drove me to the Mountain View Police Station. Everything happened so fast that I did not understand what was going on, and I didn't have time to protest. I was very scared, but I wanted to stay calm and not make matters worse for myself. Once we got to the police station, police officer number one grabbed my injured arm and took me into the building. He placed me in an interrogation room and handcuffed my left arm to the chair. By this time, officers number two and number three had arrived. I wanted to talk with my lawyer, but they said, "No, we've got questions for you, but you can make one phone call." One of the officers dialed the number to my mother's home and handed me the phone. I told her I was arrested and I wasn't sure why. I told her I was going to be there for one, possibly 2 hours, and then taken to the main jail facility on Heading Street in San Jose. Police officer number one said I would be held there all night, and I believed him. The three officers began questioning me for approximately 45 minutes. The questions they asked were as follows. "Are you a Muslim? Do you celebrate Ramadan? What is your true nationality? What is the country of your citizenship? What was the purpose of your trip to the Middle East? Did you speak to any local people? Did you speak to any Arabs that you met in Dubai? Did you take any dangerous or illegal weapons with you to Dubai?" After I re-explained that the trip was work-related, the officers repeatedly told me to come out with the truth and give the real reason for my trip to the Middle East, or face spending the entire night in jail. After they questioned me, they read me my Miranda rights. Then, removing the handcuffs, police officer number one told me to stand up. He did a full search, and his hands went pretty far up my shirt. I was really uncomfortable. I felt humiliated and extremely embarrassed. I didn't know what else to do or say because I felt that they were in power, and I did not want to make things worse for myself. He grabbed me and he said that he was taking me to the main jail facility in San Jose because Mountain View doesn't have a jail facility. I was held there for about 2 hours until someone came in and said I was free to go. I went outside, I called my mother, and she picked me up. The next day, my mother was very upset and called the Palo Alto and Mountain View District Attorney's Office. She asked the DA why I was questioned at the police station. Then she asked if the police officers were discriminating against me. I asked the police department to mail the police report to me. I was completely shocked when I received it. The report had different details from what had actually happened to me. The police report said that the officer pulled me over because my left brake light was out. When he asked for my driver's license and proof of insurance, I would not provide it. That I tried to walk away from my car and I refused to return to it. That I would not sign the citation being issued for the broken taillight, and that I was told I would be arrested if I did not sign the document. I was never asked to sign a citation. The officer reported that I refused to step out of the car, and that he then, quote, reached inside the vehicle, grabbed my left arm, and applied an academy-taught and department-approved near-twist lock, end quote. That when we arrived at the Mountain View police station, he read me my rights, and I said I understood, and I waived my rights. That when he attempted to ask me more questions regarding the incident, the officer reported that I stated that I had the right to remain silent, and that he did not question me further regarding the incident. I was charged on 3 counts. Count 1, willfully resisting, delaying, and obstructing a peace officer in his duty. Count 2, failing to present a license upon demand. And count 3, the crime of stop lamps not activated upon application, an infraction. I lost my job in the Middle East because I could not go back due to my pending case. I am upset and frustrated because the job market here is so bad. My mom has sleepless nights. My parents don't understand the laws of this country and feel as if things are happening because they are foreigners. They're constantly afraid. I won't drive 10 miles outside of my house because I get frightened when I see police officers. I have not been able to visit friends who live further away. I've had to hire an attorney. I'm defending the charges against me, and I'm trying to have them dropped. My attorney has advised me that I may have an infraction and misdemeanor on my record, and it's possible that I may have to serve jail time. He has advised me that I should not file a civil suit or contact the media because it will make matters worse for me. He has told me that there is not much he or anyone else can do because it's 3 officers' word against mine. I'm awaiting a pretrial hearing on this matter in November. My family and I are experiencing extreme emotional distress and grave fear. I am convinced that had it not been for September 11th, the officers would not have asked me if I were a Muslim when they saw the foreign currency in my purse. I believe that if I was a Muslim, the situation would have been a lot worse. I'm certain that I would have been incarcerated in jail overnight, if not for a longer period of time. As a result of this incident, I have become sympathetic towards the Muslim community. We all deserve to be treated fairly and with justice.
Thank you.
Thank you, Soyinka. We've heard a lot of powerful and moving testimonies tonight, and it took tremendous courage for the testimonial givers to come out and share their experiences, as painful as they might be. I'd like for us all collectively to take a minute to thank them for their bravery and for coming out and contributing to the public school. At this time, we'd like to go back to our key witnesses and get some reflections on some of the stories that we've listened to. First, I'd like to introduce Annabelle Ibanez, who is the organizing director for the South Bay AFL-CIO Labor Council.
Good evening. My name is Annabelle Ibanez, and I'm the organizing director. And before I start, I really want to thank the people for sharing their stories today with us. I'm very humbled and touched by their courage. And I, like many people who've shared their stories, know many people who've gone through some similar situations. I also want to be able to mention one of the speakers, Mario Campos, mentioned that there's a journey that has been embarked by over 900 people around the country to bring light to these issues. And today, we're doing the same thing as these people who, from all over the country, are going to Washington, D.C. to share the stories. And a lot of the stories, we hope, will be heard. And I'm hopeful that they are. And just as really quickly, as I reflected on this story, I want to share a story in terms of what's been happening to some of the Freedom Riders. We know that if in California, such a diverse state, things like this are happening as what we heard today, just imagine what may be happening in other states where people do not look like us. Yesterday, the bus that left from the Bay Area was in Reno, and they were having a demonstration in front of the INS building. There was a counter demonstration by anti-immigrant groups, and the riders who are in this journey know and knew in advance that they were going to be facing counter demonstrations. But what was so exciting about that is that it was only 10 people who came out with their anti-immigrant signs. And when they were doing the demonstration at the INS, the people kept their spirits really high, and they were even more motivated to continue on with their journey to do what they're going to be doing in Washington, D.C. and across the country, to take the message that immigrants have made a great contribution to this country. And not only have they made a great contribution to this country, but that we are the backbone of the economy of this country. And so they're taking that message, and their spirits are really high, and they're still, no matter what, because a lot what's been happening also, just to share a story with you, is that as the organizers of the Immigrant Freedom Ride, we're receiving a lot of hate mail from people from across the country saying, we're going to welcome you by having detentions. Because there's a lot of people in the bus, as Mario said, that are risking their lives. And many people don't want this message to get across. And we want to make sure that the riders, the new Freedom Riders, do get to Washington, D.C., and do get to New York, and be able to take their stories. And those stories a lot of these people are taking are also the stories that we'll share here today. I also, one of the things that I want to say in terms of the labor movement is an organization that's represented by 110 unions that represent over 110,000 working families here in Santa Clara and San Benito counties. And we represent many members from different ethnicities, different backgrounds, and many of our members have faced a lot of the stories that we'll share here today, from racial profiling to being detained for whatever reasons. And one of the things that I want to say, and it's a message from Phaedra Ellis Lampkins, who is the officer of the South Bay Labor Council, is that the labor movement is in solidarity with all of you who share the stories with us. And in the labor movement, we believe, as Reverend Martin Luther King said, that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice anywhere, everywhere. And therefore, our community must work together to address the injustices we've heard here today. And I know that we cannot give up our hope. And just like Jesse Jackson always says, we must keep hope alive.
Thank you, Annabelle. Next, I'd like to introduce Delorme McKee Stovall, the Acting Director of the Santa Clara County Office of Human Relations.
Good evening. Since I began my role with Santa Clara County, which was just 2 months before September 11th, I started as the network coordinator for a hate-free community, and then the tragedy hit. Within 30 days after the tragedy of September 11th, I found myself immersed in public forums just like this one tonight. I have participated, I know, in well over 36 public forums speaking to the issue of the devastating impact of not only 9/11, but the Patriot Act itself. The themes that I've heard tonight are the same themes that I've heard over the last 2 years. We've had a tremendous decrease in respect for one another. We've had a significant increase in fear with regard to one another. There's been a dramatic increase in hate violence directed towards one another as a result of fear. We've also had a dramatic increase in discrimination, not just in the workplace, but when you go to buy simple things like food and other services and products. We've also had a tremendous increase in a fear for our own personal security when we're traveling on public transportation or in our own personal vehicles. We are now living in a situation, I believe, where increasingly more and more of us feel dehumanized, we're often detained, and there's a definite shift in our perception about what American civil liberties are all about. Refugees are dramatically being impacted. All the services to immigrants are being impacted because financing and funding for those services have been dramatically impacted and reduced. This evening, I want you to think about the stories that you've heard. I've heard these stories over and over and over again. The Network for a Hate-Free Community since 2001 has received over 500 reports of hate violence in our community. And we know that only reflects 10% of what's actually happening. We know that people are afraid to report what they're experiencing. But I encourage you, if your friends, if your family members, if your coworkers are experiencing hate violence, call us at the Santa Clara County Network for a Hate-Free Community. You can report it personally. You can report it anonymously. We will respond. And most importantly, we're letting the Board of Supervisors know about what is happening in our community so they can build effective strategies so that we can all feel safe and secure in this community.
Thank you, Delorme. Now I'd like to introduce Assemblyman Manny Diaz. Assemblyman Diaz has been a tireless champion for immigrant rights and justice in the state of California. He has used his position in the Assembly to write legislation allowing Mexican immigrants to carry valid ID cards. He's co-authored the newly ratified driver's license bill and defended Korean immigrants targeted for deportation by John Ashcroft.
Thank you. Good evening. When I started this, first of all, let me commend the speakers for sharing their stories with all of us. It's not easy for people to really share what's been going on with their personal lives. So it takes a lot of courage to be able to do that. So, ahora lo voy a decir en español. La señora que estaba aquí antes, le quiero dar las gracias por hablando de su vida, lo que está pasando en su vida ahorita. I'm a first-generation Mexican-American. I mean, you look at me, I look like Mexican. And I'm very proud of my heritage. And when you look at our country here, you know, we're a nation basically of immigrants, folks. And if other people that are here don't get it, something is wrong. And my mom raised five of us by herself. And she still speaks a lot of Spanish. She doesn't feel very comfortable trying to assimilate here in the United States, even though she's lived here for a very long time. And when I see this kind of stuff happening after 9/11, and then I see what's going on now with Prop 54, and of course what happened with Proposition 209, 187, quite frankly, I'm sick and tired of all this bashing that's going on with our immigrant communities, because I really believe that our immigrant communities is an asset that we have here in America. And here in California, it's a greater asset because we're pretty diverse here in California. We are really the future of what's going to happen to the rest of the United States. We're just kind of ahead of the game. We also happen to be the largest state in the union. I want to share with you that after 9/11, if you recall, there was an effort before 9/11 to open up more of the borders of Mexico with the United States. They were both President of Mexico, Vicente Fox, and President Bush were talking about opening up the borders more, creating more of an amnesty program, and trying to work again with undocumented folks that were here. And there was a lot of potential there. After 9/11 happened, all of a sudden the borders of Mexico were closed. And we had to go, our Governor Davis, we took a trip to visit President Vicente Fox in Mexico City to again assure them that here in California, we were not going to close the borders to Mexican nationals. And however, it did raise a lot of fears, especially dealing with the legislation that was passed by our federal representatives in dealing with the U.S. Patriot Act and the Homeland Security issues. And all this testimony that we're hearing now is basically a manifestation of what's going on, especially with some certain law enforcement folks. I think it's very important that we have the proper type of support, not only in legislation, but also in training, in education. Having these types of hearings, I think, is very helpful, but we need to do a lot more and include a lot more people. That's the reason I wanted to come here tonight, to be able to hear these testimonials. But obviously, we have a lot of work to do. I want to make sure that we're going to protect our civil rights and to also make sure that we're going to try to stop discrimination as much as possible. We were able to pass resolutions to try to help our airport screeners. To me, that was a real tragedy when we had all these airport screeners that could not keep their jobs because of what happened with the change of status on as far as legalization. To me, that wasn't right. Plus, we were trying to help and trying to create some additional job training so they could maybe move on to other work. We still need to resolve that issue. Also, recently with our Korean immigrants, we had almost 200 Korean immigrants that were forced to deport. They were following all the rules, but because of a scrupulous INS official, they became victims of this INS official. Now these Korean immigrants are being threatened with deportation. The state legislature passed a resolution asking the U.S. Attorney General Ashcroft to back off, to give them an opportunity by a case-to-case basis to review their case before they were deported. We're still working on that issue. Just recently, we passed in the legislature the driver's license bill, which I think before 9/11 wouldn't have been a big deal. I don't think it would have made hardly any news. But because of what happened 9/11, all of a sudden, if you're undocumented, you might be a terrorist. And we know that's not the case. We know that many immigrants that come to the United States come here to improve their lives. They come here to improve the lives of their family. I know from firsthand experience that when my mom came here, she worked the fields over here. She was a farm worker. She was also undocumented, by the way. I didn't know this until later when I grew up. I never thought she was a terrorist. She was my mom. Okay? But You know, like many immigrants that come here, they come here for opportunity for their families. You know, they want to be a good resident, but many want to eventually become citizens. And so I don't get it why more and more of Americans, of our American families, don't get it. And so when I see this far-right attitudes going on right now, and they're trying to disguise it as security for everybody, I'm talking about Homeland Security, we need to expose that. It's really a fallacy. And, you know, as an elected official, I have an opportunity to try to do as much as I can, but it's really going to require all of us here, not only that are here today, but a lot more people, a lot more of our elected officials. I like to see more of my colleagues also speak on this topic. A lot of them are not willing to do it. They're not willing to do it. But, you know, like I said, I love Mexicans. I'm proud to be Mexican. That's my heritage. And so whenever I see this kind of discrimination going on with people of color, it really, really makes me mad, because I think we need to respect each other. We need to make sure we support our diversity. We need to make sure that we protect our civil rights. And so you can count on my support whatever I can do. So again, thank you for the testimony. But let's continue working together.
Thank you, Assemblyman Diaz. At this point, we would like to announce the presence of Elaine Elquist, who has joined us, former Assembly member, sitting right in the middle here. Thank you for coming in support of this event. At this point, I think we would like to thank all of the witnesses for taking time out of your schedule to come out to this really important event and hear the testimonies of our speakers. So let's give them all a hand, too.
I'd like to invite up Lisa Castellanos, who is a board member of SIREN. Lisa is going to inspire us to take action and give us some ideas to how to take this event forward. Before I give the mic over, though, I just want to acknowledge the presence of many community organizations, both who made this event possible and are here today. They have information about the various organizing efforts that they're engaged in, so I encourage everyone to go and find out what's going on locally and support those struggles. Thank you.
Thank you. First of all, I would like to share how profoundly moved and have many emotions running through me right now after having listened to the voices and the stories of the people who stood up here, and I feel very humbled to even be up here in the same place where we just heard all these stories of individuals, families, communities who have been affected by so much hate in our community and in our country and in the world. I just want to share some of those emotions that I've felt. I this evening, the pain, the grief, the fear, the aloneness, and as I was hearing testimony and people speaking, I began thinking of my father, who came to this country as an undocumented immigrant, and as a child, remembering the stories that he would share of the beatings, and then I would listen again to the story that was the person up here speaking, and was very, very, I feel very, very emotional right now. But when I look around here and I realize that we're in a space together supporting, and everyone here obviously spending their night here because they want to listen and want to do something, then I'm filled with anger and outrage, and I'm filled with the desire for solidarity and for action. It is remarkable to hear these stories from our communities that reveal the human cost of domestic war and terrorism on our families and communities. Tonight, your participation as witnesses is crucial in broadcasting these stories to people in your community and beyond, with the hope of building strong public consensus that we can change the course we currently find ourselves in. Policies and institutional practices that can fuel hatred of immigrants, condone racial profiling, and create a climate of fear and intolerance that leads to loss, injury, and even death. This evening, a packet of action was given to you all. Tonight, we would like to suggest a few action steps that you can take in fulfillment as your role as witnesses in this evening's event. On a local level, support the airport screeners. Over 300 immigrant airport screeners, like Mr. Escobar, 90% of whom were Filipino, suffered mass termination and layoffs in 2002, some with only a few days' notice. California law requires that workers be paid the day they are laid off, but Globe Aviation Services Incorporated paid employees late and could owe as much as $400,000 in total wages, penalties, and fines. Let's join Mr. Escobar and groups like PAWIS to say that we support workers' rights and keeping corporations accountable to California law. Please sign the airport justice postcard today. Public Truth Volunteers will collect your postcard as you're leaving tonight. On a state level, you will find this green sheet in your folders. Say no to hate, no to discrimination, and no to Proposition 54. We cannot let hate go unaccounted for, go unchecked. And one way it's rearing its head is through the potential passage of Proposition 54 on October 7th. Communities, organizations, faith groups, labor, and students are just some of the many formations in our communities that say no to Proposition 54. The Coalition for an Informed California and Californians for Justice, a statewide grassroots organization, needs your help to defeat Proposition 54. Please fill out the form and leave it at the table at the end of the room with the young woman who's raising her hand. Get more information on Prop 54. There are stickers, there are flyers, and please talk to your families and share with your community this devastating proposition. On the national level, we must stop the Patriot Act now. You will find this white draft letter. As we've heard today, the momentum to dismantle the U.S. Patriot Act is building across America, across the country, and we all need to pitch in. Please send a letter to your representatives to press in on Congress to end the Patriot Act now. Please use a sample letter from the ACLU in your packet. Your presence here today to listen and support the voices here tonight are testaments of your consciousness. Please let that lead you on the natural path to action. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa. Next, I'd like to call upon Reverend Juan Saavedra. He is the pastor of the La Trinidad United Methodist Church in San Jose. Share a closing reflection with us.
Buenas noches. ¿Cómo estamos? ¿Estamos bien? Bien. How are we doing? We good? I'll get this right. Okay. I think it'll work. He's going to steal the show, you know. He already has. My name is Juan Saavedra. I'm an interesting mix of all kinds of people. Right now, I'm serving a Spanish language congregation here in San Jose. Everything we do in that church is in Spanish. It's an interesting experience to be here and do this in English, in fact. I am not Mexican. I'm not South American. I'm not Central American. I'm a Native American, if I'm anything at all, the son of two different tribes, Yaquis and Tigua. Both are Spanish-speaking tribes here in the United States. I have spent my whole life being treated as an immigrant. My whole life. Everyone's always asking me where I'm from. You know, like Manny Diaz, you know, I look Mexican. You know, I'm not Mexican. I speak Spanish. I'm not Mexican. You know. My grandfather was born on territory of the United States not long after the Civil War. My father was born in New Mexico territory before it was a state in the Union. And as far back as you care to go in my heritage, my family is from this area. So welcome. We build walls. We paint images of people as those images benefit our prejudices. We're human beings and we bristle not with love and kindness, although we love to think that that's the case. We bristle with pride and prejudice and an insistence that we build walls. You know, we've got two borders. We've got a border to the south. We've got a border to the north. You know, nobody talks about the border to the north. It doesn't exist because everybody up there is just like us. You know, I love this room. I love this room. I love looking at you. I mean, of all the things that were said tonight, the most moving thing that I experienced was that incredibly long silence that we participated in out of respect. That was an amazing moment for me to sit there with all of you and shut up and listen. Listen. Our faith, whatever our faith is what we bring to this conversation. Our faith, our insistence that we serve a God who is good, no matter what our background is, no matter where we come from, what our languages are, our customs, our color, we serve a God who is good. Amen? Amen? You can say amen with me, it's all right. No one's going to bite you for saying, I agree, you know, we are one. Amen. We serve a God who loves, a God who cares, a God who touches us in specific ways in our lives, our journeys, our stories, are things that have shaped us and molded us and made us who we are. The passions we feel, the concerns we have for other human beings emerge out of a unique relationship that each of us possesses with our higher power, as some people choose to refer to God. Our higher power and that connectedness. And all of us have that connectedness. And we're tied to one another. We're tied and we become a body. I'm a pastor. One of the things I do is I read from this book. I want you to hear something that is real interesting. You know, people quote Bible all the time, you know. I'm going to read from the Jewish scriptures, from the Hebrew Bible. It's from Deuteronomy. It's from chapter 24, verses 14 and 15. Do not take advantage of a hired man who is poor and needy, whether he is a brother Israelite or an alien, a foreigner, living in one of your towns. pay him his wages each day before sunset, because he is worthy and he is poor and he is counting on you. Otherwise, he may cry to the Lord against you, and the Lord will hear, and you will be guilty of sin. Amen. Amen?
Amen.
I mean, you want to hear the word or words of God? That speaks huge volumes to me. I want to hear that verse quoted everywhere we go. Pay the man what he's worth. Pay the man what you hired him for. Give the man, the woman, his or her dignity. Don't steal it from them. We can agree on this. And when we don't do it, just know that every time you have seen someone not receive their wage, someone has sinned. Right? Amazing. Someone has sinned. Also, implicit in that verse is when you don't accept the sojourner, when you don't take the sojourner in and pay the sojourner what that sojourner is worth. Amazing thing. Let us leave this place with a vision for human wholeness, for expanded community, knowing that we can make a difference, and that the world deserves the difference we can make. The world deserves the difference that we can make. And to that, I hope we can all say once again, Amen.
Amen.
Join with me in prayer. Creator God, you who have fashioned all that we see, all that we are, we thank you for this time this evening to hear story, to be challenged by what we have heard, to share, participate in an incredible journey of all peoples on this planet. Thank you for allowing us to come to this place and be counted before you. We thank you in your many names, in the many ways in which we know you. Amen.
Thank you, Reverend Saavedra. That brings us to the end of tonight's program. We want to thank you all for coming out and participating. We know how busy everyone is. But a few things to take away, for me certainly. I think unity and diversity is a theme from the Office of Human Relations. I know a lot of people came here today maybe a little bit hesitant about how they felt about hearing stories, but being in a room full of other people who might feel the same way should give you a sense of security, a little bit more than you had before you came, hopefully. On behalf of ARC, who worked extremely hard for putting together this event, and the Muslim Community Association, which was gracious enough to host us, all the sponsoring organizations and all of the testifiers, the witnesses. I'd like to thank all of you. And I think Assemblyman Diaz is right. It's great and touchy-feely to talk about things and to get your feelings out there, but it needs to be followed up with action. And I think Lisa brought forward some concrete things that we can all do to continue the fight and the education. And I think we need more public truths. So thank you very much.